Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer at Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital. Doc, you guys should feel pretty good over there at Northwestern. U.S. News and World Report listing Northwestern way up there on the list, top spot in the state as far as hospitals, ninth straight year of that, and let's see, 10th in the nation for the second year. Pretty good. You guys doing something right over there.
Yeah, Bob, we are. We're very proud of that, and we're proud that we have three in the top 10. So between Central DuPage, downtown, Northwestern Memorial, and Lake Forest, three of the Northwestern hospitals made the top 10, which is very encouraging and knowing that we're headed in the right direction.
Yeah, and let's hope we're headed in the right direction with what we're doing about this pandemic, although the news certainly has been troubling. And in fact, I was chastised. My wife and I were chastised over the weekend. We were with our kids, and we were outside, and we were at an event that there weren't a lot of people around, but we were talking to some people at a picnic table, and we were keeping our social distance, but according to my kids, we should have been wearing a mask. I mean, is that what you're suggesting, even if you're outside?
If you're outside and you're still going to be within 6 to 8 feet of somebody, wearing a mask is going to be appropriate. You know, if we have a chance right now to squelch and slow this, boy, our opportunity is right now. We've gotten too complacent. If you're outside walking and moving and away from people, unmask isn't necessary. But you're going to be sitting down at a picnic table or sitting down in an area with a group of people, then certainly wearing a mask, unless you're eating or drinking, is very appropriate. Like you said, we're headed in a kind of a troublesome direction right now, and we're still very fortunate in Illinois, but boy, that could change very quickly.
If you get the virus and you're asymptomatic, what are the chances that you'll be one of the people we've been hearing about who have long-term ill effects? Are those people only people who are getting the symptoms and are not asymptomatic?
Correct, correct. The people that you're talking about, the long-term effects, are those where it's getting into the lungs and doing a lot of damage, certainly enough damage to give symptoms. So the asymptomatic person really is, you know, it's kind of like winning the lottery. You know, you good parts and bad parts. One is you could spread it. That's the bad part. But two, you potentially had this illness. Your body will potentially protect you for a period of time without any untoward symptoms. So very positive. And that's why wearing masks is so important right now, because these asymptomatic people. But yeah, the long-term effects of somebody that hasn't had symptoms, where there hasn't been cell damage, is very promising.
What do we need to know about keeping masks clean and storing our masks? And we know that you don't want to touch your face. You want to keep that to a minimum. But what about how we're storing our masks and keeping them clean? What do we need to know?
Yeah, if you have a cloth mask, then you should wash that frequently. I'm not saying wash it every single day, but you should certainly wash it frequently. You have to remember that all of the viruses or bacteria that are captured in that mask are from your mouth. Our mouths are filthy. I mean, it's always a great test question. If you'd rather get bitten by a dog or bitten by a human, which is what's the best answer? And the best answer is dog. They have cleaner mouths than we do. So, you know, using the mask appropriately, but getting rid of it if it's a paper mask and it's soiled. You do want to keep these in a bag, a paper bag, or in the air, or you know, leave them in your car. The virus will not last long at that time. People are concerned if you put them in a plastic bag and there's moisture, will bacteria multiply? Very possible, but again, this is bacteria that's coming out of your mouth that's already present, so you're not going to reinfect yourself.
So the safest would be a paper bag.
Paper bag is the best. It dries it out. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, when we first started at all the hospitals with PPE, we would give out the mask and a paper bag for them. I think individuals now have gotten to a point where many of us are just leaving it in our car when we get home. So that's what I do, actually, each day.
And what about goggles? Are you recommending goggles? When do people need to wear some sort of eye shield?
Yeah, certainly in the healthcare setting, we're wearing goggles all the time now. So all the physicians and nurses who are seeing patients in the hospital are wearing goggles. So it's interesting. We talk about masks and goggles. Masks, we're wearing a mask to protect others from. Excuse me, we're wearing the face mask to protect others from you. It does give you some protection. But goggles now are to protect you from the virus. We know that the virus can get in through the eye. So therefore, goggles are very appropriate for anybody who's going to be in a close setting where they are going to be with individuals who may not be distancing, who may not be wearing masks. If you want to be totally protected, a goggles and a face mask in that situation would be best. For routine use, I'm not concerned. I don't wear goggles going to and from work. I don't wear goggles when I'm walking around the non-clinical areas in the hospital. If I'm up on the floors, then I'll put goggles on.
Continuing with Dr. Kevin Most, and Doc, I am really confused about what everybody's talking about regarding kids and school. Are kids big transmitters of the virus to adults, or aren't they?
Well, it depends who you listen to, right? So we hear that they aren't, but then we also hear that they have a large viral load, and so our biggest concern is that we've had these kids isolated for this period of time or semi-isolated. So do we really know the answer to that? And is it going to play out as we go through the school year? If you think about a normal summer where we would have had all these kids in summer camps and basketball camps and baseball camps and soccer and all together, what would have shown here? So we have seen some outbreaks in some basketball camps that have gone and left the state and come back, so that they've spread it within those camps. But now, when you bring them back into the family setting, how are they going to spread? So if you think about it, the individual has virus and is coughing and sneezing. Why would that not be transmitted to adults? Right now, it's because we've isolated them, but let's see what happens as we start to loosen up on some of that.
What do you see with kids and the flu viruses? Do they transfer those to adults often?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you think about the normal coronaviruses. You know, we've talked for a long time how there's, you know, three normal coronaviruses that cause the common cold. How many times have you heard a parent say, oh, my kid went to preschool and got a cold, and sure enough, we all got the cold. So we know that spreads. We know that influenza spreads, so there's no reason why this one would not. And I think really a lot of it right now, is like I said, has been on the social side of it instead of the medicine side of it.
From a listener, a question for you, Dr. Most. Both my wife and daughter are teachers in different school districts. I have COPD, and we all live in the same home. What precautions should we take when they get home from school?
Yeah, so, you know, the concern there that a lot of people have is it going to be on my clothes, and should we be changing clothes? I think, you know, when this first came out, we really were pretty aggressive, and then found out that, boy, it really doesn't stick around a lot on clothes. Certainly for those individuals, I would say still, when you get home from school, change your clothes, wash your hands. You don't need to do more than that. But really watch for any outbreaks in the school. Now, when you asked about goggles, I will take back one thing and say I believe teachers should probably be wearing face masks and goggles. They're going to be in a setting with individual kids for a long period of time. I can't tell you how prominent the fitting of masks is going to be on these kids, and we want to do everything we can to protect the teacher, which is, again, not protecting others from us. We want to protect the teacher in these settings. So I definitely would tell them to wear goggles or face shield.
And can you go over this again? If someone tests positive for the virus, how long do we think they're contagious?
Well, we know they're highly contagious, excuse me, for about the first 2 to 5 days. you know, and actually a couple days before. But early on, when they're having early symptoms, whether it be fever, cough, shortness of breath, muscle aches, any of those, we know that that's when they're the most highly contagious. The virus is hitting its peak, and it's being expelled at the greatest numbers. After about 10 days, so 10 days after the symptoms have started, we know that the chance of being contagious drops off dramatically, and many of us are using the 14-day just to give you a four-day bumper to be careful.
We're still getting a lot of questions about herd immunity, and how and when do we get there, or is that a solution?
Well, it would be a solution if we got to a point of having a vaccine. To get natural herd immunity where we would all get infected, we are so far away from that. Remember, you're talking about positivity rates that are great when we're talking about them at 4%. Well, for herd immunity, we want the positivity rate to be upward of 60%. So we want 60% of the patients to have been exposed and have antibodies to it. Above that number is even better, but 60 is probably pretty good. That would mean that someone would walk into a room with 100 people, 60 of them would be protected. The chance of them spreading it beyond that is pretty slow, is pretty low, especially when we're talking about a disease that spreads to 1 to 2 people potentially, versus something like measles, where we need a herd immunity rates up in the 90% because it is so easily transmitted.
A lot of news about vaccines, and I saw last week a headline about Northwestern looking for 5,000 volunteers to participate in virus vaccine trials. Do you have an update on that for us, Doc?
Yeah, you know, vaccine trials, you're going to see every month now for the next 4 months, you're going to see some new companies coming out. Obviously, the first one that hit the headlines was the Moderna one. They partnered up with UIC, and they're looking for volunteers now. Northwestern partnered up with AstraZeneca. You may have heard about this vaccine very early on because it's the one that came out of Cambridge and had very promising studies and very promising results. So we're looking for volunteers that are interested in participating. And these are really true heroes, the people that are going to step up. This is a vaccine that's only been tested on, you know, a small number of people that has been shown to be safe. And now we're going to test this on 30,000 people. Now, we know that there's going to be 5 other vaccines. So there's going to be we're going to be looking across this country for upwards of 200,000 volunteers to test these vaccines, which is going to only speed up our opportunity to get a vaccine out for everyone. So individuals who are interested, you can go on to nm.org and look there for the our AstraZeneca one. I'm sure you can go on to UIC's, and I would not be surprised if Rush does not and UFC do not partner up with either Johnson & Johnson or Novavax for the upcoming vaccine trials that will be released in the next month or two.
Are we going to get drug therapy before a vaccine?
That's a great question. You know, the thing about drug therapy is it takes so much longer to come up with a brand new drug because you have to go through efficacy, then dosing, then safety, and long-term effects, where the vaccine, we can go to it much quicker. That being said, right now we're looking at about 15 drugs, very similar to remdesivir, that have been used in other conditions that may be very possibly effective here. So you'll probably hear more about that. You'll also hear more about monoclonal antibodies, where we're going to teach the body how to make more antibodies. And then also convalescent plasma, which we've had very good success at Northwestern. So any individual who had COVID in the past, the opportunity for them to donate blood so that we can use their plasma on patients who are critically ill is also very appreciated and a way to give back to society.
Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer at Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital. Always good talking to you, Doc. Thanks for the good information every Monday morning. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good, Bob.
Be healthy. Yeah, you too.